Quality News Network. The Dow suffered its biggest one-day decline since March. We'll have closing numbers coming up. At a meeting held in Baghdad, U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker accused Iran of increasing its support of militants in Iraq. In this, just the second meeting between the two countries in more than 30 years, Crocker said there were several heated exchanges over 7 hours of talks. In a speech delivered to military men and women at a Charleston Air Force Base in South Carolina today, President Bush said, quote, "The facts are that al-Qaeda terrorists killed Americans on 9/11, they're fighting us in Iraq and around the world, and they're plotting to kill Americans here at home again," end quote. Last night, a Democratic presidential debate was held in the same city, Charleston, and all eight candidates ripped apart the president's Iraq war agenda. A new survey shows a sharp drop in Muslim support for suicide bombings. The Pew Research Center survey looked at data from 47 countries. In Lebanon alone, those who said such attacks are sometimes justified dropped from 74% to 34%. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has extended the deadline for the release of 23 Koreans taken hostage last week. The militants want 23 Taliban prisoners released in South Korea to withdraw its troops. Negotiations are ongoing. Five Bulgarian medical workers in prison for more than 8 years in Libya are back home in Bulgaria. The recently sworn-in president of France's wife, Cecilia Sarkozy, was instrumental in their release. The humanitarians were accused of purposely infecting children with AIDS, a charge they have consistently denied. Upon their arrival home, they were pardoned by the Bulgarian president. The NFL is wondering if any other players are possibly involved in dogfighting in addition to Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick. Each team has been asked to investigate their players to see if they have any involvement in the blood sport. Vick and his three co-defendants face a federal judge on Thursday. Wildfires continue to rage across the West. The over half a million acre Murphy fire in Idaho is up to 20% containment. Yesterday, that figure was just 15%. Another blaze in Idaho, the Poe Cabin Fire, has charred 35,000 acres and is 15% contained. Evacuations and road closures remain in effect. Same-sex couples in Washington State can now register as domestic partners. A new law went into effect yesterday. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business next.
To help offset global warming, each of us can help ease pollution of our environment in a variety of ways. At home, use less energy by turning off lights and switching to fluorescent bulbs. Weather strip doors and windows. Run the dishwasher only when full. Turn your water heater down to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Recycle household trash. U.S. households produce 21% of the country's global warming pollution, and just these few minor adjustments can make a big difference. On the road, slow down for better gas mileage, drive less, and keep your vehicle tuned up and tires properly inflated. For more information on what you can do to help reverse the effects of global warming, contact the Environmental Defense Fund online at fightglobalwarming.com. This Environmental Minute has been provided in the public service by the Quality News Network.
Illinois passed a law prohibiting smoking in public places. Smokers will be fined $250 if they're caught. A study released today shows lowering your cholesterol too much may increase your risk of cancer. Researchers found that patients who take statin drugs to lower cholesterol had a higher risk of cancer. The study did not show, however, that the statin drugs themselves are cause for concern. New York City's health department says one out of four of its residents have elevated levels of mercury. They're blaming it on too much fish consumption. The minimum wage went into effect today. The federal wage went up 70 cents an hour to $5.85. Disappointing earnings results, along with mortgage market concerns, fueled a retreat on Wall Street today, the Dow falling more than 200 points. DuPont was the biggest industrial loser, and mortgage lender Countrywide issued a profit warning because of persistent problems in the subprime market. They feared that the subprime effects will spill into the prime market. Oil is off $1.33 a barrel at $73.56. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow lost 226 points, wrapping up the day at 13,716. The NASDAQ was down 51 points at 26,39, and the S&P 500 was off 31 at 15,11. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 21 of Strictly Confidential. I'm your host, Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. And thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. What was that I heard at the close of Bob's show? Apparently, someone called it and told Agnes she was married to a faggot. You know, those people are about as bright as a rock. I mean, how many hundreds and thousands of hours have they listened to Bob on the radio, and let me just clue you in. We have a day shift gay guy and a night shift gay guy. I'm the night shift guy. We have a day shift guy, and he came out on my program on June the 18th. If you don't know who it is, you could just go back and listen to the archive. I'm not even going to bother to tell you, but it's not Bob. God, those people are so ridiculous. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of the guests as well as to the chat room and the Head On Radio Network main site, and there you're going to find out all about the progressive programming, and yes, you might even find about the gay guy on the Head On Radio Network other than myself. That's strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and the call-in lines to reach the show is 877, the number 4, Head On, which is also 877-443-2366. If you have an unlimited toll-free long-distance calling plan, you can use that and save the show a nickel. That's 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email comes in to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I try to check the email during breaks. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. Remember that if there's a guest you'd like to hear on this program, just drop me a note, and I'll do my very best to have them on the show, and you are appreciated, and I do listen. Today was Finish Moving the Tree Day. I had brother-in-law over today. Brother-in-law brought his huge John Deere green tractor, and we hooked chain to the back of the huge tree that fell over, and we dragged that off into the field. He brought my little great-nephew with him, John, and John is probably about six, and John and I stood together and I kept John out of the way of the tractor when the tree got pulled off. And boy, I tell you, kids 6 years old, it's one question after the next question after question. Good Lord, I so could not handle kids. My stars. Mostly the questions were about Doggy. He was just fascinated with Ms. Jenna, the show Doggy. Speaking of guests, tonight we have Shara Greer. Shara will be joining us at 9:30 p.m. Shara is the Director of Law and Policy for Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is also known as SLDN. And I'm very much looking forward to talking with her and to have her join us tonight. Shara is one of the nation's leading experts on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. You may know the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is the only law in this country that forces people to lie about their personal lives or be fired or possibly imprisoned. Yes, it makes just about that much sense. Some of you may think, well, you know, what is this don't ask, don't tell? You know, it's not really that important. You know, that's just kind of, you know, for them, it's like an employment issue. Doesn't, you know, we've got bigger fish to fry, you know, gay marriage, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the Service Members Legal Defense Network pointed out in a blog, just a fact that it was either today or today, that, and this is very important, that no nation has ever legalized or recognized same-sex couples before lifting the ban on gays in the military. In countries where there's a federal recognition of our relationships, that recognition has come within just a few years of ending the prohibition on open service in the military. Very interesting. So, yes, in fact, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is very important, and they are absolutely right in that statement. There are, I believe, 24 countries now that allow military folks who serve openly. In fact, we did a story just recently in Spain. Alberto and Alberto got married. They're both in the military in Spain, and they even had permission to wear their uniforms at their wedding. Bless their hearts. And so we'll have Shara join us at 9:30 p.m. And that'll be an interesting interview. Timely news that just came out today involving Don't Ask, Don't Tell. After discharging more than 60 Arabic language translators for being gay, the military is now forced to rely on a translating machine that's not been fully tested, according to the National Institutes of Standards and Technologies. IST researchers are evaluating a prototype. It's a real-time two-way translation system for Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And they point out that wartime military patrols and civilians encounter dangerous situations if neither groups understand the other's language. Well, duh. The DARPA program, also called TransTAC, meaning Spoken Language Communication and Translation System for Tactical Use. Can you imagine how much money this thing cost? In addition to the millions of dollars that have been spent on ousting folks from the military, now we're spending money on this device that, well, listen, this is what it does. It's aimed at a shortage of Arabic translators caused by the firing of the linguists under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law. Now, NIST ran a series of laboratory and outdoor evaluation tests on this prototype with English-speaking U.S. Marines and Iraq Arabic speakers at its Gaithersburg campus, and found that the systems have improved somewhat. Well, let me tell you what somewhat means. Improved somewhat is technical speak for, yeah, it's a piece of shit, but we got to sell it. Oh, my stars. It says that effective two-way translation devices would represent a major advance in field translation. Hell, you fired all of your effective two-way translation devices, did you not? And how could this be an advance? I'll tell you, it's not an advance at all. You see, this device can only translate English into pre-recorded Arabic phrases. It cannot translate Arabic into English. So I imagine this little handheld unit that basically says in Arabic, I would like the chicken and the salad with French dressing. You know, something that you might get out of the back of Reader's Digest to take on your trip overseas. Nonprofit groups who are fighting the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law are claiming that military homophobia is harming the national security, and yes, it absolutely is, and we'll hear all about that when Shara joins us at the bottom of the hour. And but before Shara comes on, we have caller Jim on the line. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine this evening. How are you doing?
Just listen to what you're saying. Good Lord. I mean, I live in the world of acronyms. I just love those acronyms. Don't you? DARPA.
Oh, my God. Some of these were hard. The TransTAC. Now, that's an amazing, amazing long TransTAC. Yes.
Too much.
Yeah, some of them are hysterical.
Too much. You know, and when you think of how much the Pentagon has spent on ferreting out these capable individuals and the prodigy they've lost, and now they've got some type of machine to try to do this, it just goes
beyond. It's one way.
It just goes beyond scale. I wonder if they had one that could do pig Latin.
I don't know. If they do, Jim, no doubt it's a one-way pig Latin. It will translate English into pig Latin, but it will not translate pig Latin back into English. That would be the industry standard right now in handheld devices.
You know, I tell you, when I have these crazy people who call me up in the soliciting and all this kind of stuff, I mean, for commercial purposes, nothing immoral, thank God. But nonetheless, I'll look at the caller ID and I say, Leon, hey. Hello, hey. And they just finally leave.
Well, Jim, that's much nicer than me. I either don't answer or I say something really hateful. At least you're good-spirited about it. I tend to get very annoyed with all of that. Not that, you know, as a child I didn't do telemarketing. Of course, you know, every gay kid has to do telemarketing, recruit children. You know, when you're young, you have to make those calls to see how many children you can recruit, and you get free candy for that.
Oh, God. Listen, may I share one telemarketing experience that I had? since we
Please do.
You have time. It only takes a minute or two.
Yes, yes, there's time.
This was, I think, 1985 or something like that. And this lady calls me up and says, "Good evening, sir. I have a wonderful opportunity for you." And I said, "Okay, what is it?" She said, "If you will only answer one of several questions, we have a great prize." And I said, "Okay, what is it?" And she said, "What is a common everyday seasoning that is white that accompanies pepper?" And I said, "Wow, let me think." And I said, "I don't know."
Oh, no, Jim, you did not. Okay, you're doing it. Okay.
Says, "Sir, sir, I is authorized to give you a hint." And I said,
"Oh, Christ."
Okay.
Okay.
I said, "I really appreciate that." And she said, "Go into your kitchen while I wait for you on the phone and look for it in the pepper, and look for it next to the pepper. It's in a round container, blue, and it has, when it rains, it pours."
And oh, Jesus.
I said, okay, I'll do it.
Got the picture.
So I went in the kitchen, poured myself a drink, checked on dinner. About 10 minutes, so I came back and I said, "Wow, this is really something. I don't know." And she said, "You've got to be the dumbest son of a bitch I've ever talked to, and I ain't going to ever call your ass again." And hung up.
Oh, my. I hope she didn't.
No, she didn't, but, you know, I just laughed enough, and I was just, and, you know, and in the meanwhile, I had called a friend of mine because I had two-way calling. I said, "I want you to listen to this." And he was like, "You won't believe it if I tell you." But that's not the reason I called. I just wanted to call and tell you about something I saw on TV. And it's a documentary about Fire Island.
Okay. Oh, good. But before you tell me about Fire Island, though, I'm deadly curious. What do you think she was selling? Do you have any idea what she was pushing with the salt net?
I don't know.
I bet it was maybe life insurance or a policy for your health, too much salt or some rigmarole. Who knows
how
they're going to tie it.
Well, I think at the time they were promoting these books with these tickets or something that you could go to the pet food parlor or something.
Oh, geez, I hate
that
those
kind
things.
Of crap. You know that you know, uh-huh. You get a 5 cents off of your getting your dog's nails cut or something. I don't know. But
yeah.
I used to play with those people all the time. And
well, the Republican version of that is $20 off your hooker, of course.
Well, I had one call me at one time, and it was an inopportune time, and I said, "Man, I'm sorry, I'm having sex right now."
You didn't.
Yes, I did.
I mean,
if you want to get outrageous, if you want to call me an outrageous, this was after 10 o'clock. And I said, "Geez, God, what was this?" And I said, "I had sex. Would you like to wait? Would you like to listen?" It got them off the phone. It certainly gets you off the mailing list. But I hope
so.
I haven't offended anybody out there tonight. But I mean, I just want to share this with you. But
it's strictly confidential, Jim. Nobody can. We're the only two people in the whole world. Just keep telling yourself that.
I see. I know. I can see the people in Fort Meade now saying, "Who is this crazy man?"
I want to hear about Lynn now. I want to hear about Fire Island.
Oh, okay. This is a wonderful 2-hour documentary. It's called Where the Sky Meets the Sea. And it talks all about, you know, the history of Fire Island, how it came to be, and this, that, and the other. And it connected with me because I can remember back when I was a kid, I used to watch the Jack Parr show. And they used to have this woman who'd come on and do the weather named Peggy Spears. And she was this Garba West-looking blonde with her hair parted on the right side, very statuesque, very beautiful woman. And she would always say, "Well, darling, the weather in so-and-so is sultry." Well, I said, "Peggy Spears." And then when I saw this documentary, she had the first hotel on Fire Island, and it burned down.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Peggy Fears, and, you know, she was just something else. But it's incredible, the stories about that part of the world and how it came to be. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, I just wish people could leave other people alone. Because
Amen.
They had boardwalks out there that are considered highways, and they was to know from Suffolk County Police that they would have to drag in 20 people, you know, and, you know, they would actually chain people to a telephone pole and drag them in. And the warnings were put out, you know, do not go home by yourself. Go with a group. So it's just how repression and stuff just continues, labels and stuff like that, calling names, just like Agnes Bob said earlier on in his program about someone called him, this, that, and the other. I just wish people would attend their own damn business and leave other people alone.
Yeah, Jim, there's a lot of people that feel that way. I completely agree with you, brother.
I mean, dear friend, I have a 24-hour job, and that's taking care of me. I don't have time to mind anybody else's business.
You know? Amen.
Like that old song by Hank Williams Jr., whoever the hell it was, mind your own business. And if people would do that, we'd all be a hell of a lot happier and a hell of a lot better off.
Yep. Absolutely
now,
true.
Your time, we've just gone the whole gamut here, and I do appreciate your indulgence here, and I hope you have a good
night. Story. Thank you so much for calling, Jim.
By the way, I'm still working on that book, and I've got the time.
No.
Really?
Okay, what? Okay, great. What?
The Well of Remembrance.
The Well of Remembrance. Now, that's a very good title, actually. That could become a classic.
Could be, but I haven't thought of a nom de guerre or nom de plume. So I have to think about it.
I hope I'm not in that book. Certainly you wouldn't have the audacity to mention Strictly Confidential in that book, would you?
Well, no, but I mean, you know. But I thought The Well of Remembrance might be a good title. What do you think?
I think it's a marvelous title.
And, I remember when when they did a fake book called Naked Came the Stranger, and they had 20 of the best authors contribute the worst chapters of the book, and they collated it, and they actually put it on television, and, you know, it even got reviews in the New York Book Review, or Times Book Review, and the author was Penelope Ash, another pseudonym. But it was the worst of the worst that the literary community could offer. And they put it into a book, and damn near became a bestseller.
Is that a fact? People, if something is different like that, people will get anything, you know, a coffee. It sounds like a good coffee table book.
Well, I guess so. But anyway, and it opened up where this woman was talking about how she simply had to nail her guts on the typewriter key. That was the opening preface. But anyway, you have a good program tonight. Enjoy talking with you.
Thank you, Jim. You too. And I'll see you later.
All right.
Good night, my friend. That was caller Jim. And speaking of Fire Island, I've been reading lately. This guy annoys me just a little bit. God bless him. His name is Andrew Sullivan, but there's what... He's good. He's an excellent writer, and he writes for the New Republic and probably other places too. But there's one particular thing that he keeps coming back to that just annoys me to no end. He's talking about Provincetown, and he's going on about the types of folks that go there. This is a very long article, but there's a section here, and it's a point he hits on again and again. He says, there's no single gay identity anymore, let alone a single look or a single style or a single culture. And he's talking about Provincetown. He says Memorial Day sees the younger generation of lesbians, and they have their baseball caps and the prep shirts and the short hair and the earrings. And Independence Day brings the
countless, well, like party guys, you know, the younger guys, a perfect torso, and the thirst for the nightlife, and countless bottles of water and what have you. And then you have Family Week, and it was a huge influx of children with their harried gay parents running around Provincetown. Then you have Film Festival Week, and that brings in the artsy gay and lesbian crowd. Then there's Women's Week, and that brings in more, well, you know, more of the more mature lesbians, the older folks, you know, for Women's Week, who are involved in the movement more than likely. And then you have the East Village Bohemians, and they drift in throughout the summer, and the quiet male couples in that group spend a lot of time browsing gourmet grocery stores and realtors, and they do cruising night spots. And then there's the writer population, and they mix with the gay lawyers and the cops and the teachers and the shrinking. But the bottom line is, and that's all well written, and I left some of it out. But he really flows. But he's saying slowly but unmistakably, gay culture is ending. And he goes on to say that, in fact, it's beginning to dawn on many that the very concept of gay culture may one day disappear altogether. And he goes on to say, I mean simply that what encompasses gay culture itself will expand into such a diverse set of subcultures that gayness alone will cease to tell you very much about individual. Well, duh! Is there an echo in here? I've been saying that since the day we came on the air. The diversity in this community has... There's never been a single set or a single subculture that was gay or that was lesbian. You could never define it. It's just that the media and the stereotypes did define it their way. But I just got to tell this guy that that's always been true. This is nothing new, absolutely nothing new, that we're a diverse set of subcultures and that gayness alone will cease to tell you very much about any individual. And, yeah, way to go, guy. I completely agree. Preach it, brother. That's exactly true. Let's see here. I don't want to do that because I'm saving that for a little later. I could do this real quickly. I had a nice email from one of our good friends, a friend of the show in Arizona, and he's pointing out that, you know, at the beginning of the show, Agnes says, "Gather around the radio, kids," and he's pointing out that, you know, these fundamentalists and that they're you know, taking notice of this show, that they're very likely to take that out of context and say that we are recruiting children. And of course he is right, or she is right. I won't even give you the gender. I'll only say they're in Arizona. But this he or she is right. We constantly, night after night, talk about the American Family Association and the Wingnut Daily and all of the things that are constantly taken out of context and twisted around. But you know, I've decided, you know, it's kind of up to me. I talked to the studio about it today. It's kind of up to me about what the intro says. And I've decided we're keeping, hi kids, stick around the radio. Because, you know, you change that and something else, say a lot. You know, these people are notorious for distorting the truth. There's no point in changing that. Because, you know, if they don't take that out of context, they'll take something else. And I think what I might even do is when I have some time, run a series of promos. I'll use, like, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood as background, or if I really want to go after the infants, I'll use, like, Lullaby and Goodnight. And I'll do a whole promo about, you know, hi, kids, are you under 12 years old? Will Mommy and Daddy not give you a PlayStation? We will. Welcome to the homosexual lifestyle. You know the drill. Anyway, fundies, we ain't scared of that. Ain't scared of that here. So, as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free at 877-4-HEAD-ON. And I'm your host, Peter Godbold, streaming exclusively on the Head-On Radio Network. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. Bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here, nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Christian Fellowship here has been a place for our community, a space where we can all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
And we're back from break, and welcome back to Strictly Confidential, the second half hour of the evening. I'm not sure that we have Cheryl on the line yet. We are getting her on the line. So while we're waiting, what we will do is talk about what happened with the North Carolina pastor. You remember the other evening we had the question from the pastor in North Carolina. His name is Reverend Reggie Longcrier. He's the pastor of Exodus Missionary Outreach in Hickory, North Carolina. And I know Bob did this segment earlier on his show. I didn't hear his segment covering this. Bob and I talked about it earlier today, and we decided that we would both cover it. Our listeners don't necessarily overlap 100%, but I wanted to be sure that I covered it too. You recall that CNN and YouTube had the in fact, they're doing it again for the Republicans. The Republican thing is coming up when on September the 17th, but you can send in a video to YouTube, and they will present that video as a question to one of the candidates. I see that we have Cheryl on the line. I'll go ahead and finish the story, and we'll go directly to Cheryl after that. In any case, the question that that Longcrier asked was truly one of the best questions of the evening, and he ran it by the North Carolina, or the former North Carolina Senator John Edwards, what you'll hear is the question. This only runs about a minute and a half. The question that Longcrier asks and also the response from John Edwards. Agnes, if you'd run that, please.
Most Americans agree it was wrong and unconstitutional to use religion to justify slavery, segregation, and denying women the right to vote. So why is it still acceptable to use religion to deny gay Americans their full and equal rights?
I think Reverend Longcrier asks a very important question, which is whether fundamentally, whether it's right for any of our faith beliefs to be imposed on the American people when we're president of the United States. I do not believe that's right. I feel enormous personal conflict about this issue. I want to end discrimination. I want to do some of the things that I just heard Bill Richardson talking about, standing up for equal rights, substantive rights, civil unions, the thing that Chris Dodd just talked about. I think that's something everybody on this stage will commit themselves to as President of the United States. But I personally have been on a journey on this issue. I feel enormous conflict about it. As I think a lot of people know, my wife Elizabeth spoke out a few weeks ago, and she actually supports gay marriage. I do not. But this is a very, very difficult issue for me, and I recognize and have enormous respect for people who have a different view of it.
Well, frankly, Senator, we don't really give a damn about your Southern Baptist background and the fact that you have been influenced by your Southern Baptist upbringing, as all of the listeners on this show know. It was a Southern Baptist church that split away in order to support slavery. That was the whole thing. The Southern Baptist church has always been one step behind. And how transparent can you get? You know, we're just straddling the fence here. Wife says one thing, husband says another thing. So we're just hedging our bets here. Very transparent. The conservatives catch that. The liberals catch that. You're not hiding from anybody with this faux argument that you are on the fence and conflicted by it. Nor do we believe that an educated man like yourself thinks that we should not have our civil rights. What we do believe is that you're using your Southern Baptist background to hide from making an answer to that very good question by the Baptist, the minister from North Carolina. By the way, that minister was in the audience, and he said he was not particularly pleased with that answer and that he did not hear anything new that had anything that he could latch on to, and I don't think anybody else did either. So joining us now, we have Shara Greer, and I'm so pleased to have her on.
They're going to be attacking us.
And that's great news that we have Shara on. I just heard an odd thing in the headpiece, but I think that's okay. That just went right away. And what I want to do is go ahead and introduce her. I'm just looking for the bio. I know I have it here somewhere. Shara Greer is, that would be Shara Greer Esquire. Here we go. There we go. She has been with SDLN since 2001. She served as the Director of Law and Policy. Greer manages SDLN's legal services, the lobbying, watchdog, grassroots programs. Greer is recognized as one of the nation's leading experts on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and she's spoken on the gay ban before audiences across the country. Greer has appeared on CNN and National Public Radio, among others, and she's edited three annual reports on Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Survival Guide, a handbook to assist service members with the rules of survival under the policy. And by the way, I've looked through the titles of that handbook, and apparently to survive, don't tell, is a huge accomplishment. You'd be amazing the details that the hoops these folks have to jump through just to cope with it. Shara Greer has graduated from the University of Washington with degrees in political science and philosophy. She received her J.D. with honors from Rutgers University Law School in Camden. And prior to SLDN, she was the associate with the firm of Weissman & Mintz, and they specialized in plaintiff-side employment discrimination and labor law. She left Weissman & Mintz to serve as a staff attorney with the National Veterans Legal Services Program. There, Greer worked on cases before the Court of Appeals for Veteran Claims and represented plaintiffs in two class actions through the National Veterans Legal Services Program regarding Agent Orange.
She's been active in the LGBT community for over 15 years, and she's also the co-president of the GLBT and Transgendered Attorneys of Washington. She's on the board of the National Lesbian and Gay Law Association and the Philadelphia Attorneys for Human Rights, which is now called the Gay and Lesbian Lawyers of Philadelphia. Ms. Greer, I'm delighted to have you with us this evening. Welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Had some obstacles getting you here. We've had to reschedule a couple of times. That's our fault. Every time you would have come through, we just had some technical problems. So I've been gathering information on you for at least a week or so, and then it came time to introduce you, and it wasn't in my hand. that's the way things go. Sarah, at the beginning of the hour, we were talking about what Steve had to say recently in a blog, that no nation has legalized same-sex or recognized same-sex couples before lifting the ban on gays in the military, and I was trying to get that across to the audience in terms of how important this is to all of us. And I've also been reading your timeline. You know, this is just about the most complicated and evil thing, some of the stories that these folks have been through. Sheriff, if you wouldn't mind taking a while to tell us about SLDN, I'll point out to you that we have a huge number of straight listeners who are progressive and sympathetic to our cause, but they don't always know an awful lot about us, as you know, the mainstream media doesn't really tell anybody the truth about who and what we are. And we have a large number of GLBT folks too, so you're speaking to a wide range of folks, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. In terms of a timeline, you're right. I mean, the fight for protection for people in the military from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, you know, dates back to before World War II. I won't take the timeline back quite that far. Sort of most recent chapter of that history starts in 1992 and 93, when then-candidate became President Clinton promised to lift the ban on gays in the military, which at that point in time was a regulatory prohibition on service in the military by individuals who stated that they were gay or bisexual, who engaged in conduct broadly defined, and ironically, even back in 92, said individuals who married or attempted to marry individuals of the same gender. And that at that point was a regulation that the president could have changed via an executive order. And that's what Clinton promised to do as a candidate. And then when he took office, said he was going to do, meeting immediate resistance from both the Pentagon as well as members of his own party, in addition to the Republican opposition. And very quickly, in a very ugly, nasty fight, ended up with a very bad compromise that really wasn't much of a compromise at all. We wound up with a statute as opposed to a regulation passed by Congress that President Clinton signed that says, you know, you shall be separated from the military if you say that you are homosexual or bisexual, if you engage in homosexual conduct broadly defined to include things like hand-holding, and if you marry or attempt to marry someone of the same gender. So in essence, they took what had been regulation, passed it as statute, agreed to stop asking people when they entered the military, and a couple of other minor changes, and announced that a good compromise and moved on, which left in its wake in 1993... you know, a community fairly battered by this very ugly sort of first national fight, you know, within Congress on an LGBT issue of that stature. And a lot of people in the military who really believed that the law was going to change and were now either being kicked out because they had come out in hopes that the law was changing, or were left in mass confusion. And there was mass
Yes.
confusion for several years as people tried to figure out what in the world was different about the statute and how would the implementing regulations be put into place.
Yes.
So, you know, after there were some regulations put into place that were fairly helpful, one of which was, you know, people would no longer be asked when they entered the military. One problem had been that you used to have to sign a form when you joined the military that said that you had never engaged in homosexual conduct. And then if you were later found out to be gay, they would prosecute you for fraudulent enlistment. That stopped. And they tried to put into place some investigatory rules, which unfortunately have very little teeth and were not well understood. But over time, with a lot of attention and pressure and work, we have seen some pretty dramatic shifts in terms of what's been happening within the military. We no longer see rampant witch hunts, which used to be fairly common, where, you know, they would identify someone known to be gay, and they would get that person to identify all the other gay people they knew in a particular base or unit. You know, you used to see
yes, in the beginning, in the very beginning of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it's my understanding that the witch hunts went on at the beginning of it. Is that true?
Yes, and the witch hunts continued really until 98, 99 is when we stopped seeing witch hunts. We still occasionally see improper investigations and commands that may try to go beyond investigating just one person, but that's extremely rare these days. You know, through our legal services program, we get in touch with a lot of service members, and you know, we have not seen a witch hunt really in the last 7 years. But it took until 99 really for that to change.
That's a period of about 6 years, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was not, the change was not instantaneous or easy. To try and get compliance with the new limits on investigation. You know, supposedly now in the military, you have to have a specific evidence that an individual has violated what the military calls the homosexual conduct policy, which means that a service member has either stated to somebody that they are gay or lesbian. And I just need to emphasize one of the things that's really confusing for a lot of people about what is called Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the popular culture is, by saying that you're gay or lesbian, that is a violation of the statute, and it's a violation of the regulations. But it's not just saying that you're gay or lesbian to somebody within your command or in the military. We've had people be separated because they told their parents, because they told a civilian friend. Anyone, anywhere, any time that you say that you're gay or lesbian to, that statement can be used to separate you from the military.
We didn't know that.
Which makes it very hard to be gay or lesbian in the military. You have a reality that's very similar to previous sort of regimes of the ban on gays in the military, which is as long as no one finds out who can kick you out, or as long as no one cares, you can continue serving if you're gay or lesbian. But if someone finds out
now
who cares, you can be kicked out.
This included telling your doctor or maybe a military psychologist or someone you were seeing, it included the medical profession within the military, isn't that right? Telling them they were required to report that you were gay?
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation for service members. Service members generally don't have any, there's no, you know, doctor-patient confidentiality within the military. Military medical health, mental and medical providers are consider the service their patient. So if they find out something that may compromise the service member's ability to continue serving, they're supposed to report it. There's a lot of confusion because currently there are no rules that doctors have to report service members they find out are gay, or therapists, or social workers, or counselors, or chaplains. But there's also no clear rules that they're not supposed to report people if they find out if they're gay. So we have had, unfortunately, people who, in seeking medical treatment, have revealed their sexual orientation, in seeking spiritual counseling, have revealed their sexual orientation, only to then be outed and turned in and kicked out. It leaves very few safe places within the military for service members to turn to, you know, when they're in crisis, which, since 9/11, has become even more poignant and more difficult. You know, we have seen massive deployments of service members. We see service members going on deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, 2, 3, now 4 times. And they're separated from their families and loved ones. And for gay service members, they have very difficult time safely contacting their partners. or talking about being, you know, gay or lesbian, even via email. And they have very few places where they can go and get counseling or support, and all of the support networks that are provided for service members generally are not as accessible for gay and lesbian service members because they have to be so careful about not talking about such an important part of who they are. And that's been very difficult and, you know, very stressful for a lot of the people who are, you know, sort of valiantly trying to continue serving their country under difficult circumstances for everyone who's currently serving, but, you know, with this extra set of very heavy burdens sitting upon them.
We were talking about this fairly recently. There was an example of apparently there are communications areas where the military has access to computers or a group of computers to email their family or their friends. And you'll have situations where a gay U.S. soldier is sitting next to a soldier from the foreign military, the foreign military person being from one of the 24 countries, at least I think it's 24 at this point, that allow gays in the military, talking openly and freely to his GLBT friends back home or her GLBT friends. You have the U.S. soldier sitting next to them having to not say anything. It seems like a terrible psychological burden.
Yeah, and that's one of, I mean, that's absolutely right, and it's one of the great, you know, sort of tragic ironies in all of this, is in both Afghanistan and in Iraq, a significant percentage of the allied forces, particularly the United Kingdom in Iraq, allows people to be openly gay within their military. And so we do have situations where there are openly gay British troops, Australian troops serving right alongside American service members, including some gay service members. And yeah, it's a very, you know, here they can be out and talk to their friends and talk to their families without any concerns, and the U.S. service member has to be incredibly careful. Because while, you know, it's not as if the military is looking for gay people the way it has in the past, so you can, to some extent, communicate, but they do, you know, all communications from combat zones are monitored, and if any of your emails are discovered, you can be kicked out. If you happen to save anything on a hard drive, that can get you in a lot of trouble. You know, there's, it's not safe. You have to be careful. And that's so difficult, and you're exactly right. I mean, here's a circumstance where you have people doing the same job, working side by side, under entirely different rules. And you have the same thing with, you know, Department of Defense civilian employees, contractors, people in the CIA and NSA, all can be openly gay, but the uniformed service members they work with can't.
I didn't think of that. And not only that, the contracted people over there are making loads of money, whereas the service people have their rights taken away. They can't be gay, and they're not. And actually, in going through some of the material, I think it's as of 2002, they can face significant financial penalties for saying that they're gay or it being found out that they're gay or lesbian, because they'll take back all of what, the education, signing bonuses. How does that work? There's a financial peril too in this, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a little complicated, but yes, if you, under certain circumstances, if you've received substantial education benefits, or an enlistment bonus or re-enlistment bonus, and this is usually true only in cases where people make statements that they are gay or lesbian, they can recoup the money. They can take the money back, you know, prorated basis. But, you know, if you went to college on an ROTC scholarship and you were supposed to serve, you know, 4 years active duty after your college scholarship, you know, your college time was up, and you've only served two, you're going to have to pay back half your college tuition. So it's a very, you know, it is not without consequence to get separated under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, I do want to point out the other sort of major consequences. If you're separated under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or the military calls the homosexual conduct policy, it will say on your discharge paperwork homosexual admission or homosexual conduct. So you are now and forever on your military paperwork outed. So when you go job seeking, you know, most employers are going to want to see your DD-214 at least for the first job or two after you get out of the military. You are now out. And you can't change that. So it's sort of one of those, another one of the consequences of, you know, being separated under under Donat Santel. One of one of the ironic things is the society has changed so much that, frankly, for a lot of service members who are discharged, that's not a huge issue. Most service members nowadays get an honorable because you no longer get penalized for, you know, violating the homosexual conduct policy in your discharge characterization. So you get a good discharge characterization. And what's ironic, going back to the contractors, is, you know, we've certainly had circumstances where someone's been kicked out of the military because they're gay and are immediately snapped up by a defense contractor and are doing the same job for a lot more money. Again, we have lost talent and resources, and they're still doing the same job.
Interesting. Well, you know, we're hearing reports, too. We've talked about it from time to time. You know, if soldiers are coming back from Iraq with post-traumatic, PTSD or PTSD? I always get it confused. And now that the VA is in many of these cases saying that that condition existed before they went in order to deny benefits. In fact, we've had several reports of that. Is this something that they're doing to GLBT individuals also? They're saying you were gay before you went in, so therefore, if you're wounded, you can't receive. Are all your benefits taken away too?
Generally speaking, no. You don't lose any of your benefits. It is tragic that often the VA appears to be, you know, having this battle with veterans about whether or not they're allowed to receive benefits to which they're clearly entitled. And part of that is saying that medical conditions pre-existed their military service, because the key in veterans benefits, medical benefits to the VA or disability benefits to the VA, is that your condition began while you were in the military. Fortunately, yeah. You know, being gay is no longer considered to be a medical condition, so you can't get benefits because you're gay. So any benefits you'd otherwise be entitled to, you know, are not affected by your sexual orientation. Now, if you're kicked out at a point in time where you haven't been able to serve long enough to be entitled to a benefit, that can be affected. But simply the fact that you're kicked out because you're gay doesn't affect your benefits.
Well, how about this Department of Defense thing? There, about the time that the first time I had asked you to appear on the program, which we could not do, that was about the time that the Department of Defense issued a revised statement about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And in my reading it, we talked about it on the air a few nights later, and in my reading it, basically what they're saying is, yes, we want you to serve your country, but you can still be dismissed under the ban, but basically sleeping next to us. In other words, go home, join the civilian employment, join a federal agency, join the Department of Defense, join the private sector, and on and on and on. Just basically, we don't want you sleeping next to us, is the way I read that. What's going on with that, and where do you think the Don't Ask, Don't policy is going at this point in time?
Well, I think the writing is on the wall. You know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell will be changed. This ban on service by gays and lesbians and bisexuals will be ended. The question is when and how. But I mean, I think even the Pentagon, you know, parts of the Pentagon are starting to realize that this is a matter of when, not if, this ban is going to be lifted. And I think, and who knows, because I don't work for the Pentagon, but I think their change in statement, you know, is part of this larger shift in rhetoric that has been going on for several years from the Pentagon. I mean, the Pentagon used to always, when they talked about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, say, we absolutely have to have, you know, this law and this policy because it's so important for, you know, our ability to function as the military. And lately, especially since 9/11, we're hearing more and more, not that we have to have this for our own sake, but this is Congress's law and we enforce Congress's law. You know, and sort of the much more toned down statement of, you know, gays must certainly serve their country, you know, even if they're separated under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they can go work for, you know, the National Security Agency, they can go work for, you know, use their talents on the civilian side of the military. I mean, I think it's a shift acknowledging that the times are really changing. And I think when you add that to what's happened to the numbers of people who are being kicked out, and the numbers of people who have been serving openly, you can see this major culture shift. I mean, the number of people being kicked out has dropped by half since 9/11. Now, that's pretty typical in a conflict. Whenever there's a conflict, the discharges of gays and lesbians drop dramatically because they need people. We will see if this trend continues. In the past, when the crisis is over, the discharges have gone back up. But we see on a pretty regular basis, our legal services, people who are serving, their commands know they're gay, people in their units know they're gay, and the general response is, we don't care. And if we can find a way not to have to kick the person out, we'll do that. That's not true for everyone, it's not true for every command, but that happens so much more than it happened even 5 years ago, where there is this willingness to, you know, basically laxly enforce the current law.
Well, in reading through some of the material, I'm noticing that there is a disproportionate number of female soldiers who are kicked out on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It seems that, and it's related to a term called lesbian baiting. Can you tell us about that? It seems that they're rougher about getting rid of. Is it that they don't want women there to begin with? What's up with that?
There are a lot of different things I think that lead to that statistic. One of them is definitely the intersection between sexism and also homophobia. I mean, it is not, you know, if you don't like a woman gets promoted over you, you ask a woman out, she turns you down, you're a guy, you know, it's not an unusual response to call the woman, you know, accuse her of being a lesbian, call her a dyke. If the person happens to be lesbian, that can be really difficult to deal with. It's a really good way to go after and harass somebody. And even if they're not, you know, try and disprove that you don't mean try and disprove the accusation. You know, the way this works is if you want to stay in the military and you actually get brought up before an administrative separation process, you have to prove that you do not have the propensity to engage in homosexual conduct. And I challenge anybody, straight or gay, to prove that. I mean, opposite-sex partners. Just because you've dated people of the opposite sex doesn't mean you don't have the propensity. You know, it's this very broad, very vague kind of term. So it's very easy to target a woman and harass her and go after her and use as a way to end her career if you want to. And it's just one of, I think, the real tragedies of this is it allows people to use the law to harass people in this unique and very painful way.
Yes. Yes, it reminds me of some reading I've done lately about what happened in Nazi Germany. If you didn't like a coworker, all you had to do was go say that they were homosexual, and that was pretty much the next day they wouldn't be there. It sounds like the same scenario. You just anybody you don't like, you know, you accuse them of not of being a lesbian, perhaps.
Yeah, and when having an investigation, but, you know, if your accusation is viewed credible or you've got a command that's willing to listen, you know, then you're subjecting the person you're accusing to this very painful investigation process and, you know, potentially a separation board. It is unfortunately used often as a way to go after people, and women certainly suffer a large brunt of it, but men too. What we see now is a lot of the service members who are really struggling under Don't Ask, Don't Tell right now are not, the military is not hunting them down anymore. They're coming to the attention of the military and commands often because someone has maliciously outed them for one reason or another. You know, we've seen people outed because of a nasty breakup. We've seen people outed because of a dispute over a off-base apartment. It's a great way to go after somebody, and if you have evidence that they're gay, you know they've got a MySpace page, or they've sent you an email you've kept, or you know you've got a card they gave you. You've got a great way to to cause them a tremendous amount of stress and anxiety and you know, potentially in their military career.
This is true. Well, what about the percentage I'm reading, at least is back in 2002, I believe this was correct, that there's a huge disparity in these two, it says that 83% of the people who are discharged, at least from the Air Force under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, were 18 to 25 years old, but that they only account for 35% of the people in the force. Those numbers don't add up. It's obviously not spread evenly across. Why do you think that happens? What's up with that?
I think there's a couple of factors leading to that, and that's pretty much a statistic that runs true across all of the services, which is a disproportionate number of people who are kicked out are junior, you know, the young kids, 18 to 25, and usually enlisted. Not the officers are not the skew is not quite as much. I think a lot of it is that as a junior enlisted person, you tend to have a great deal less privacy. You know, as you raise up in the ranks, it's easier for you to have off-base housing. It's easier for you, you know, to sort of have some distance from the people that you work with and therefore keep, you know, if you're having a private life, have a private life. It's much harder if you are a junior enlisted person to have a lot of privacy. You're often living on base and you are with your peer group a lot in ways in which you can't really, you know, have a life they don't know about. It's very difficult to, you know, do things on weekends and never talk about them. I think also the other factor, and this is something I find both encouraging and, you know, so tragic for some of these young men and women. A lot of young men and women now really don't understand being in the closet. Their peers are fine with them being gay and lesbian. Some of them were out in high school. The concept of having to be in the kind of closet that Don't Ask, Don't Tell requires simply is foreign to them. They don't understand. You know, they don't understand other things that, you know, we've seen other reports about MySpace and people putting things on MySpace that you probably shouldn't put on MySpace. You know, we've seen several dozen instances where, you know, young service members simply don't understand that, you know, posting things on your MySpace page is telling and can get you separated from the military. And I think largely there's just a culture that being out and talking about your sexual orientation is not the taboo that it once was, which unfortunately leads to problems because there is still this imposed closet in the military, and you have to live by those rules if you want to stay safe and stay in the military.
Well, quite rightly, they don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. There's no logical argument, and one could easily understand how, you know, it's hard to wrap your mind around something as ridiculous as Don't Ask, Don't Tell, especially being a younger person and growing up. You know, I grew up, I'm 54, so I grew up in an era where, you know, it was far more secretive, but folks today, the military is just so far behind the times with this, and it's causing, not to mention that the personal turmoil in people's lives, and as you said, not that it makes so much difference anymore, but in some cases it does, you know, finding future employment, but the finances are huge. We just did a story at the beginning of the show about this new Arabic translator. Apparently it's one way it translates English into Arabic, but not in reverse. We've made a few cracks about it. But that, to develop that, had to cost, what, millions and millions of dollars, not to mention the cost of pursuing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. If you add that in, some estimates are as high as $1 billion, if I'm not mistaken. This is a huge expense to the country. Can you tell us some more about that? I'm interested in hearing your perspective of that.
Yeah, I mean, the financial and talent cost of this policy is amazing. And given that there's no support for that it actually does anything that helps the military, there's no evidence that people who are openly gay in the military have any impact on, you know, military performance, which is what the original argument, well, that's what the argument in 93 was that you know, having the presence of openly gay people would disrupt the units to the point that they wouldn't function as efficiently. Well, that's just been debunked by both, you know, the experiences of Americans with openly gay people from other countries and openly gay civilians And every country that's changed their law has experienced really no issues, you know, any significance. I mean, so here you have no justification for a law, and on the other hand, we're sending, you know, yeah, estimates range from hundreds of millions to upwards to a billion of how much this has cost us in not only kicking out the 11,000 people that we've kicked out, but the additional estimated 2,000 to 4,000 people every year who don't stay in the military because, you know, they don't reenlist, they don't extend their commitments because they can't continue to serve in the closet. So we're not just losing, you know, the 600 to 1,000 people who are kicked out every year, but we're also losing an additional upwards of 4,000 people every year. Plus, you're losing an entire recruiting pool. I mean, we just saw again the Army missed their recruiting goals for the second month in a row. You know, and here's an entire population of people you could be recruiting from that are excluded, you know, folks who aren't willing to go back in the closet to serve in the military. So here are all the personnel and talent costs, you know, the actual cost of having to retrain people to replace those who leave. And then you have the critical specialties law. I mean, we've seen, you know, over 300 linguists with, you know, language skills that we are in desperate need of and cannot meet our recruiting and retention goals for. Arabic linguists, Farsi linguists, Korean linguists, you know, we've seen dozens of them discharged. I mean, training a skilled Arabic linguist takes a long time. It's a tremendous resource. I mean, the commitment
I should
to train someone to
the mind boggles.
Yeah, so my boggles. So we're losing things on all these things. And all of these different ways we are losing money, talent, skills that are difficult to replace, hard to recruit, hard to train, simply for the fact that these individuals are, you know, gay or lesbian. We saw a really brilliant one of the former clients of this organization did a great op-ed in the New York Times a couple weeks ago. He's an Arabic linguist who was simply recently discharged because sexual orientation was discovered. You know, who writes eloquently that here he is, a trained Arabic linguist, was doing his job. You know, somebody got a hold of an email in which he talked about his sexual orientation, and now he's gone. And they don't have enough Arabic linguists. And here he is, perfectly willing to serve his country, perfectly skilled and capable, and now his talent can't be used. And that's just, you know, just a foolish waste of resources and talent in addition to all of the money that we are wasting to enforce this law.
It's interesting to note that it's been pointed out. In fact, I think it was Denny Meyer. We had him back in June, and he's with the American Veterans for Equal Rights. And he was pointing out to us that to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, nothing actually changes. There'll still be gay people and lesbian people in the military. It's just that now we don't throw them out. It's not like suddenly, you know, everybody thinks it's going to be this huge change, at least the people who are unaware of what's going on. But actually nothing changes. The only thing that changes is we stop ruining people's lives. And he also pointed out, and I didn't get the person's name, I may have it somewhere in my notes, but he said that many, many high-level, high-ranking people in the military are gay and lesbian. He said, you want an interview at Admiral? I'll give you an Admiral. I assume it's a retired Admiral. Right, one wouldn't think that an active Admiral would come on Strictly Confidential and out himself. But the man, Denny is credible. He was a very good guest. Apparently there's just a huge number of people who rise in the military to great prominence.
No, I mean, and Denny's, and I know Denny, and he, you know, he is absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, what's so ironic about all this is, despite the law, despite the prior regulations, there are an estimated 1 million gay veterans in this country, and an estimated 65,000, you know, gay and lesbian people currently serving right now. So a lot of gay people serve in the military despite the law. And there are high-ranking officials who've come out. There is, to my knowledge, there is one admiral and two generals who have come out as gay, retired. And recently, in response to General Pay's comment, seven more very senior military people came out. Not quite admirals and generals.
Wow, I didn't know.
Full colonels and Navy captains. captains and, you know, very senior, over 20 years retired military came out, speak out, because they were so outraged by Pace's comments. And there are a lot of very decorated, high-ranking, both officer and enlisted individuals who are gay and lesbian, who are starting to speak out more and more. And I think it's also fabulous that not just the gay folks are coming out supporting getting rid of the NS and TAW, but we're seeing more and more high-ranking straight military coming out supporting repeal of the NS and TAW. And we saw former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Shalakashvili, at the beginning of this year, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, you know, basically saying that he was wrong, that now gay and lesbian people, you know, he believes that gay and lesbian people could serve in the military without it being a problem. And, you know, he's, you know, certainly the highest ranking person to come out saying that. But we've seen, you know, General Kennedy, who's a 3-star general, General Vance Coleman, who's a 2-star general, a Master Chief Petty Officer of the Coast Guard, the highest ranking enlisted person in the Coast Guard, has come out, you know, saying that as a straight service member, this is wrong. And it's not good for the service members, and it's not good for the military. And that's a huge sea change, and so important that these voices are starting to come out in support of repeal and saying, you know, this would actually not be bad for the military, but actually this would be good. We'd stop wasting all this time and money kicking people out. We'd be keeping good, talented people in the military. We'd be able to recruit and retain more good, talented people in the military. And yes, if you look, you know, the point that you raised as well is if you look to what's happened in other countries, and in particular, you know, the United Kingdom is one that was pointed to a great deal in 93 as, look, well, you know, the British have this ban. We have to be like, you know, see, we need to be like them. And the British fought tooth and nail to keep their ban. They were ultimately forced to change the law in 1999, claiming the sky would fall, recruiting levels would drop, everyone would quit. It would be this disaster for the British military. And nothing happened. Recruiting levels were fine. Retention levels were fine. It wasn't as if gay people were all of a sudden dancing around saying they were gay. Everybody just went back to work. And
right.
In fact, now...
I was saying, yes, I was completely agreeing with you. Everybody's got a job to do. People just to work, they get up, they have coffee, and they pay their bills, and they just go back to work. Nothing...
What I find most ironic, and just about the UK, just to finish that, is now the British military actually actively recruits within the gay community.
You're kidding me.
Oh, no. They have, you know, a presence at the Pride. They have a special campaign targeted to get gay men to join the Navy. You know, they've learned. This is a great recruiting pool. These make great soldiers and sailors. So they have, you know, a complete 180-degree view on having openly gay people in their military within just a 7-year time period.
This is amazing.
Which is amazing.
And this is so not reported by what we refer to here as the mainstream media, which basically means, you know, you get the corporate view. I'm just amazed. You're telling us about all these high-level people that are coming out in support because they're outraged by Pace. Nobody knows that. I mean, you know that, but certainly I didn't know it. My goodness, I'm going to have to start reading your site more often. Do you post this sort of thing?
Yes, we do post this sort of thing.
Okay, where do I go? I need to stay informed on this stuff. I'm supposed to know.
Well, I have to say, with the Pace, the reaction to the Pace comments was, you know, pretty amazing in terms of the number of people who spoke out pretty loud and clear, condemning this comment.
Wow.
So, some unusual suspects.
Is this going on in Spain too? I mean, you know, the recruitment of within the gay community in Spain, is that happening too? You know, they have it serviced there too.
You know, I don't know in Spain if they have an active recruiting campaign. I mean, under the new EU rules, all the European Union countries are supposed to be either at or move towards having you know, complete non-discrimination against gays and lesbians, including within their military. And not all of the countries have gotten entirely there yet, but they're required to do it. So they're moving towards it. But I don't know, I mean, I certainly know within the, in Sweden, there's actually a very active organization of Swedish military that are interesting. They are where probably I predict the American military will be in 10 years, which is they're struggling with issues of concerns about promotion discrimination because of sexual orientation and, you know, housing issues, you know, very, very different set of issues than we're facing. Here we're just trying to get people to be like, allowed to serve. And here then in Sweden they have a very active organization that's actually working not only for, you know, that has, you know, it's working on sort of much more sophisticated issues in terms of equality within their military. And most of the Scandinavian countries, in fact, in, I believe it was in Denmark, their Minister of Defense spoke at a Pride rally this year, which are just a completely different approach.
Well, how do you interface with the GLBT military? Do they come to you for legal aid? I know you have this wonderful survival guide. I've been reading the titles. The things they have to deal with is just amazing. You have something called a corporal clinger provision, discharge characterizations, emergency contact, even emergency contact information. They have to think about that before they write it down. Attorneys, aggravating circumstances. What these people have to deal with is shocking. How do you help them? How do you interface with the military?
Well, I mean, primarily in terms of the service members, we work with them in our legal services programs. We actually have staff attorneys who represent individuals who are facing problems. So we can, you know, we work as any other attorney representing a service member with the military. I mean, we will often work with military defense counsel, which are actually, you know, nowadays very, very helpful. So we can work in tandem with a military attorney, which is great because military attorneys can actually be very, very good, but they are limited in what they can do. As a civilian attorney, we usually try to but don't necessarily have to respect the chain of command. You know, we can go to the Pentagon with an issue that, you know, a defense attorney couldn't necessarily go to the Pentagon with. You know, we can access Congress and the press in ways that, you know, a military attorney can't. So we do our very best to represent each of the service members who contact us, you know, depending on what their particular circumstances are. And most of the circumstances are, you know, the clients that we represent are people who are fighting to stay in the military. You know, and most often, you know, our cases have shifted pretty dramatically even in the last 6 years. I mean, most of our cases nowadays are people who have been outed or are facing threats of being outed, either because of something that someone found that they put out there online or the, you know, someone is outing them in a retaliation for a breakup, a parent who's not happy about a child who's coming out to them, and trying to convince the military that either the evidence isn't sufficient or, you know, they didn't do the investigation appropriately, you know, whatever tool we can use to try and get the service member to be retained. We're actually coming out with a new version of that survival guide, which is much expanded because a lot of the service members are facing new issues. I mean, one thing that we didn't ever come across 6 years ago that we see not infrequently now is service members who are trying to figure out how to have a family and have children within the military. And that's very complicated. Because if you're a service member, you're actually required to report any dependents. So given that you can't acknowledge your partner, building a family and providing any legal protections for that family as a member of the military is an enormous challenge.
Wow.
And yet,
a whole new layer.
Yeah, and yet people in the military are like people everywhere, and there is a, you know, people want to have partners and families and, you know, figure out ways to get them legal protection.
Well, the people, let me put it like this. The people who are in the military that are being thrown out over Don't Ask, Don't Tell, who really don't give a damn about the military and are, like, you know, just wanting to get out anyway,
they're not the ones who are coming to you for help. You're actually, it seems to me anyway, that you are probably much more likely to be helping people who love the military and want to make a career out of it. In other words, we're talking about dedicated military people who are being thrown out here. Is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority of the people who are our clients, who we actually represent, are people who are dedicated. They want to serve their time. They want to finish their commitment. You know, some of them want to make it to their retirement. You know, these are people who want to remain in the military, excuse me, and serve their country. I mean, there are people who contact us who don't really care about being kicked out for a wide variety of reasons. I mean, frankly, having to serve in the kind of closet that you need to serve in to ensure your military career is not easy. And I don't want to cast aspersions on individuals for whom that is incredibly difficult for them to do. But those are individuals who we usually we have lots of information on our website about how the law works. You know, we don't represent those individuals. You know, the individuals that we represent, you know, are people who are, you know, either fighting to stay in or fighting really significant harassment or other sort of very complicated issues. But most of them, yeah, these are absolutely dedicated people who really just want to be able to serve their country and do their job.
Well, this is a shame, really. You've been facing this for years. What is the current big issue going on now at Service Members Legal Defense Network? Is there some major push going on right now? How can we help? Can you tell us more about what's right now? What's the hot button?
The biggest way that people can help the effort to get rid of the National Intel right now is to get engaged in trying to build support for the legislation that has been introduced in Congress this session. The bill is called the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, and right now it's been reintroduced in the House. It's not currently in the Senate yet, but we're hoping soon. And this is a piece of legislation that would get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and replace it with non-discrimination law. Right now, best thing people can do is contact their member of Congress, tell them they support getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They can do that through our website at sldn.org. They can find their member of Congress and get a sample letter. They can also work in their local community to raise awareness on this issue. You know, they can. We currently, we're kind of at the end of Pride season for most places around the country, but we will, you know, we've offered to, you know, help people do prides in their local community, do speaking events in their local community, get the word out that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a serious problem and it does need to change, and your member of Congress can change it. And we've seen great efforts, too, with people working in their local community. It's been amazing to me to see how many cities and one state now have passed resolutions calling on Congress to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The state of California just again passed their resolution, but you know, cities from San Francisco to St. Louis, Missouri, have called on Congress and their delegations from their local jurisdiction to support repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So there are lots of powerful ways that people can get engaged to make it clear to the decision makers this law has to change.
Well, you know, I see a lot of news from places like, you know, the American Family Association, Focus on the Family, the fundamentalist, if you will, right-wing activists. There's a huge uproar about the Matthew Shepard bill right now, and a huge amount of disinformation being pushed out and emailed to all of their members, and they're encouraged to email their friends, the standard route of communication. But it doesn't seem that they seem to be real upset about Don't Ask, Don't Tell right now. Am I right in that, or am I just missing those articles? In other words, is the Christian right after you too, or are they really sticking to Matthew Shepard right now? What's up with that?
Well, I don't think they've forgotten about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, nor have they decided that they're not going to fight that fight. I think right now their focus is on the Matthew Shepard Act, because that is the one that is, you know, it's already passed in the House and it's, you know, likely to move forward in the Senate, so it's getting a lot more of their attention with the Military Enhancement Act, it is a much newer piece of legislation. It's only been introduced in one Congress before this, and we're still building momentum and gaining steam. So I think as we get close to passage, you will see a lot more from the religious right in terms of opposition to repeal it and ask don't tell. It is fascinating to me, flip side, the levels of support amongst the American people for passage of getting rid of the Don't Tell is really remarkable. I mean, it is one of the, if you pull in terms of, issues affecting the LGBT community, this is one that you consistently get overwhelming support from the American public to get rid of this law. And I'm hoping that will play heavily into when we get very close to finally getting rid of the Don't Tell. But I do think we'll see the religious right will come back. And they have said a few things. With the introduction of the bill, there was some stuff the Focus on the Family put out, and there's another organization called the Center for Military Readiness that in particular focuses on this issue. It's a very small organization, but it focuses on this issue as well as trying to limit the role of women in the military.
Center for Military Readiness, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. What is their angle, Shara? In other words, with Matthew Shepard, the angle seems to pretty much be that it's going to interfere with their free speech, that somehow hate crimes will take away the pastor's ability to preach from Leviticus. What is the angle with Don't Ask, Don't Tell? What is the Christian angle on that one?
The rhetoric has consistently been that it goes back to what was largely part of the 93 discussion, which was very simply that, gay men would be so disruptive in terms of, making the straight men uncomfortable that would be disruptive to a good unit. You just can't have that kind of, sexual tension or sexual misconduct within the military. Which is, frankly, sexual misconduct can be dealt with regardless of who's perpetrating it. And no one is supportive of sexual misconduct. And it's playing off of the stereotypes as gay men as sexual predators. And, God, straight men are going to have to shower with gay men. And bluntly and kind of basically comes down to playing off the stereotypes that, that somehow gay men are going to sexually assault straight men or straight men are going to be so concerned about that they won't be able to do their job. Which I find, frankly, is really insulting to straight men. But
well, I do, Cheryl. I have to tell you, here's the image of this big, strong, straight soldier who's being raped by this little gay guy. It just doesn't all, of course, that's a stereotype, but it seems to be what they're saying pretty much, I think.
Yeah, and I think that there is definitely the underlying... there's the underlying that, gay people aren't quite as, they're immoral. They're engaging in bad conduct. They're not, they're not fit to wear the uniform and serve our country. And that's, I think, also a piece of it, although that's not said expressly. You can sort of read it in the background of what their arguments are. But
very interesting. Well, what am I missing here? In coming to this show, and we very much appreciate it, I've been asking you so many questions because I'm just so ignorant about it. But I don't want to overlook letting you just say what you want to say about. I'm sure you have an agenda being so involved in this. Is there just something that you'd just like to say to us that doesn't involve me asking something stupid?
I thought you've asked some great questions. You've asked some great questions. I mean, I think what I would hope people would... One thing that I would hope people would take away from this is, regardless of how you feel about this current conflict and regardless about your opinions about whether or not we should even be in Iraq, to put your life on your line for your country takes an immense amount of courage. And there are a lot of people who are working very hard following the orders that they're given, whether they agree with them or not, because that's what they view as their role to serve our country and to, protect, the values that we share as Americans. And sometimes I worry that the right has so corrupted, you know, the ability to say that, you know, you actually believe in the principles of our Constitution, like free speech and, you know, religious freedom, that somehow you can't say that if you're not in the religious right, and it's sort of tainted. But I don't think that's right. I think it's to be taken back, and I have enormous respect for people who are willing to serve their country, and who are right now putting their lives on the line and are being sent back to Iraq again and again, you know, because that's what the administration says they need to do. So leaving all those politics aside, you know, if you can, I would like people to think about what it's like for men and women who are, you know, putting their lives on the line, working in really difficult situations, trying to do the best job they can, in addition to all those other burdens, being faced with having to either lie about who they are, hide who they are, be cut off from their loved ones, or every day worry about, you know, will today be the day that someone who knows about me gets mad at me and turns me in and ends my career? You know, and have I now, you know, the people that we talk to who have served 18 years in the military, they're 2 years away from their pension, they're 6 years away from their pension, they have committed their entire adult lives to service to our nation, and their careers are ended and they lose their pensions because somebody, the wrong person, finds out they're gay. You know, I view this issue as a tremendously important civil rights issue, and going back to the very beginning of this conversation, you know, I don't see a way for us to have equality for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community while we have a federal law on the books that deems us second-class citizens and specifically excludes us from one of the most important pieces of citizenship that we have. And we've seen this not only in other countries, but with our own civil rights struggles. I mean, integration of African Americans in the military was hugely important in that civil rights struggle. Women being allowed to be in expanded positions in the military was hugely important to women getting gains in the civilian community. You know, I don't see a way for us to have equality without getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And in general, it is a blemish on the larger movement for equality for everyone to have this law that deems a group second class. But for me, all of that is tremendously important, but I cannot forget the people who are every single day being damaged by this law. And these are mostly, you know, some of them are brave and heroic, some of them are everyday people, but they're trying to do a very, very difficult job under very difficult circumstances, and every day, you know, this law demeans them and demeans their service to our country and, you know, forces them to be second class. And that's just an injustice we need to do something about.
Well, Sarah, I need to tell you, I monitor our chat room whenever a guest is on, and I do that. It's a good barometer for me to see how a guest is doing and what the audience at large thinks. Normally the chat room is pretty much reflective of what the listeners as a whole, and I cannot begin to tell you how many wonderful comments. One of them tells me that I need to lasso you to keep you so that you, because all of the information that you're giving is new and wonderful. There are people saying that you are an excellent guest and that you're providing so much content for us, things that they did not know. You are a star on Radio Network chat room. I've got to tell you, you've made a huge impression on these folks, and that tells me that you did that across the board. And I also want to tell you that you do not in any way have to wait for a set or fixed interview time. You are welcome to pick up the phone and dial that toll-free number at any time during one of my shows, and I will be more than happy to put you on the air as quickly as possible. I'll shut up right away if I see Sheriff on the line, and to say whatever you need to say if there's something that we need to get across. We are interested, and we just love you. We think you're wonderful. I don't know what else to say to you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure how to respond, but I'm very happy for the opportunity to speak to your audience, and I, you know, certainly, you know, I will call up, or you know, if there's a particular need or piece in the news, I'm certainly happy to come back and talk about the latest in terms of what's going on with with the fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So as you can tell, this is something I care very passionately about. So I am happy and just pleased that people are interested and engaged and and hopefully getting a little bit of that passion. This is something we got to do something about.
Well, you've done an excellent job, and thank you for bearing with us through our technical woes. I think this is the third time we had you scheduled, and apparently the third time's the charge. Or is this the fourth time? I've lost track. I've wanted to have you on the show for so long. I think this goes all the way back to June, and every time it was Sharon's night to come on, something huge happened, and I had to cancel with you. I'm so glad that. In fact, I was telling our studio earlier that Absolute Equipment was allowed to fail today, that I would not have it. Nothing was allowed to go wrong. This show would happen if I had to carry the packets across the Internet myself. And so I'm very pleased to have you here, and thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you again for having me on, and I am glad the third time was the charm, and as I said, I'm just glad it seems like the audience is responding well.
Well, they are, and they're responding well to you. And Sharon, thank you again so much. And we hope to be talking with you. And if we don't hear from you, I will be emailing you and asking you back, because there seems to be a lot of people who are telling me to do that right away. So thank you, Sharon.
All right, thank you very much.
And have a wonderful evening.
You as well.
Thank you. And, wow, was she something or what? I just never cease to be amazed at the wonderful people that join me on this program. And this is only because of you, the listeners. As I have said before, these kind folks might talk to me for a few minutes if I phone them at their office, but surely they'd over an hour on the telephone with me unless you were there. And, I wouldn't blame them, though. And so again, I'm very pleased with that. I should tell you that tomorrow evening we are going to be having a guest from Soul Force. We have tomorrow Jeff Lutz. Here it is, Jeff Lutz. He's the executive director of Soul Force, and as you may know, Soul Force is the Gandhi of the movement. Their slogan actually is freedom for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people from religious and political oppression through the practice of relentless, nonviolent resistance. And so this is a wonderful group of people, and I'm looking forward to having them on the show. They'll be a great guest. And also the, if you remember the lesbian ministry team, we played the When the Roll is Called Up Yonder by Susie Brenner, and I told you that they traveled across the country doing a gospel ministry, a lesbian couple. They will be joining us this coming Monday, the 30th, and so I'm looking forward to having both Susie and her partner Linda on, and they will tell us about how they got started in the ministry and what it's like to be a traveling wife, the Christian ministry, and they sing in churches, and they're delightful people. And let's see, we're at 10:43, and I think what we need to do is, as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential. Call us toll free at 877, the number 4, head on. I'm your host, Peter Godbolt, streaming exclusively on the Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once did Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
HIV has changed the way people think about sex.
Today's generation really has to be aware about how they go about having sex.
HIV, AIDS is a really scary thing, and it's kind of like holds this generation captive in a sense.
Yes, AIDS scares the crap out of me.
Face the reality of AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases. Talk to your partners, practice safer sex, and get tested.
Anyone can get it, so you just need to be educated and safe.
This message has been brought to you by Redwood AIDS Information Network and Services with support from the Mel and Grace McLean Foundation.
I am so glad that you could not see me with that comeback song. That is one of my favorite to play when I was DJing in gay clubs. What a fabulous song. It's called Earthquake, and it's by the Flirtations. And I have about 25 versions of that, and I could have just danced out for the rest of the evening. Oh, that was a swift kick, Agnes. Thank you for running that. We have Jim back with us. Jim from an undisclosed location somewhere on the east coast of the United States. Welcome back.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Listen, no pratfalls, no outrageousness, but listen, you know, I've mentioned this book before, Content of Becoming by Randy Schultz, and it basically details everything your guest just said.
I've heard about, you know, I've not read it, but Conduct Unbecoming, I didn't realize it addressed, I didn't realize it, I guess I just didn't get that.
Totally and completely. It takes several vignettes of cases like you discussed with your guest, and it totally outlines everything, you know, everything, and what happened to these people and how they were treated. And the only thing I can say about your guest is this. It was interesting, in-depth, incisive, and very good. Just top drawer. Absolutely.
She was committed. I really appreciated having her on. That woman is committed. I need to tell you, she's one of those people probably that wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning and sits on the computer and starts typing out a, what is the legal document you do in court? Who knows? I'm sure she knows. A brief. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Right.
I've had to work with laws, Peter, in government, stuff like this, and with the military. And, you know, and this is very close to my heart. And that's the reason I'm calling back, probably at my own peril, but nonetheless, Cal, I'm retired.
You're safe.
I don't know if anyone's safe anymore, you know, after having read some of the things in history that I have read. But nonetheless, you know, that book by the same guy who wrote As the Band Played On, who's now dead of age, who wrote this book, Content of Becoming, it is a massive volume. It is publicly available, and it will certainly amplify everything that was said tonight.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I need to sit down and read that book, don't I, Jim?
Well, I can't tell people what to read because, you know, you probably think at the sight of a dust cover, my eyeballs just roll back in my head. As you can see before. So here's old Uncle Jim, though he's not a character from Joel Chandler Harris. But here's old Jim. Here's Jim, not so old, okay? And in spite of my, self-imposed lifestyle of not being in contact too very often with the world, I've had enough contact to tell you the truth. But I mean, I'm going to tell you, this is a good book. Good book.
Absolutely. I will definitely look into it. I will, on your recommendation, I promise.
Well, I don't recommend any books very highly, but I do recommend this. And when you read it, you will just see how these people, who are so well-intentioned, well-motivated, patriotic, love their country, and then are so marginalized, mistreated, and just thrown away like so much flotsam and jetsam. It isn't right.
I completely agree. It is.
And you know,
it is not right.
And when President Clinton, for whom I worked and voted back in whenever, and when he pulled that business with that don't ask, don't tell policy and refused to, you know, fulfill that campaign promise, I said, oh, well, here it is, another campaign promise just made but not kept.
Well, I have to admit that the whole don't ask, don't tell thing from the very beginning kind of stank, didn't it? It seemed like a huge cop-out.
I mean, you know, here's the guy who's the commander-in-chief of the military. And maybe if he'd been a veteran, it would have been different. I don't know. But he has the power to say, look, here is the executive order, number, 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 number. Just like FDR did with the GI Bill. He said, this will have the effect of law. And I will keep my campaign promise. And if you look at the other armies in the world, the Israeli army, for one of the best fighting forces in the world, they don't have any problem with that. And
no, they
all
don't,
this
Jim.
Crap about union, cohesion, and this, that, and the other, it is absolutely ridiculous. And the millions they spent to try to ferret out people who could be assets, and they turn them into liabilities. Peter,
I agree, Jim.
I hate worse than anything in the world, and that is waste. Waste of human material. Waste of human prodigy. I mean, just like Hitler, when he wasted the opportunity to find nuclear scientists, because it was Jewish science. It's the same type of thing.
Yes. I completely agree, Jim. And Jim, I have to take one more caller before the show closes,
yes,
and
sir.
So
let
we're pushing the end of the show.
Time.
Thank you so much for calling back. That's good advice about the book. Thank you, Jim. And good evening to you. And we have, and I'm surprised to see we have Kate on the line, because Kate is normally in the middle of a sandstorm by this time of day. Good evening, Kate.
Yes, one blew through last night, and I didn't get to call. I didn't even get to hear the end of the show, but whatever. So I was going to say something in Agnes, and I got off on another conversation. Oh, remember how it used to be when you never, there were, in the old days when there never were enough bars, and nowadays that's cell phones. I can only talk from one side of my house on the porch. I don't have enough bars in the house, and I don't have them in the carport, and I don't, there's just
that's
one of the
so
bars out here, honey.
That's funny. I have a neighbor who has a cell phone, and she can only use it at the end of her driveway. Sometimes I'll see her standing at the end of her driveway on the phone because it's the only place she has enough bars. People don't understand what it means to be cell tower deprived, do they?
And then even when we have enough bars, there's not enough good music, you know. Oh, God. Anyway, I wanted to hear more about the tree. It's only drug out. He didn't buck the tree. He just drug it out of your driveway?
No. No, honey, I'm waiting on you to get to help with that.
Okay.
That's your summer vacation with the chainsaw. But no, brother-in-law, we cased out it and kind of got it ready to do it Saturday, and then today he came over with the tractor and we chained it and we drug it way, well, not really way, but kind of in a field. I can see it, but it's kind of you know, it'll eventually melt into the background, you know, like the other stuff.
It could be seasoning too, and you could burn it. What kind of tree was it?
Well, actually, it's an oak tree. What we would call it a water oak down south instead of a live oak. That's what I would call a water oak.
Oh, what beautiful wood. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess I could, before I head back to Mississippi, I guess I could round up a good chainsaw, good steel with a, you know, a 15-inch bar on it.
Well, let me tell you, I would need a whole army of lesbians to you know, this place is kind of a mess. I would need a whole army. In fact,
no, honey,
you know,
we come in posses, not armies, sweetheart.
Oh, I love it. Oh, that's wonderful.
We have pink chainsaws, and my work crew was always called the Abundant Amazons. So, you know.
Oh, Jesus. I could just see it, but my neighbors driving around, I'll just say, do not screw with them. That's a gang of lesbians with chainsaws. You do not want to mess with those people. And do I still have you? Not sure. Am I still online? Yep, I seem to be still online. I don't, okay, I'm still online, but we lost Kate. Okay, now I completely understand. And I hope a sandstorm didn't get her. oh, that woman, I'll tell you, she is a desert creature. And there's something I want to get in really quickly. I want to, and because I don't have any proof of this. In other words, I cannot find a confirming source, but any of you guys that have a Kroger in your area, we don't have Kroger's down here, so I can't check it out. But I have information here that Kroger has banned gay music in their stores. No more Elton John over the speakers. It's a continuing effort to avoid offending homophobic shoppers. Kroger's banned playing what an internal music memo calls gay music over the store loudspeakers, so there's no more Yellow Brick Road, no more George Michael, Melissa Etheridge. So apparently they're still going to run songs by, you know, the druggies like... Charlie Daniels, Tom Petty, you know, not there's anything wrong with them, but that's what I hear. So I want to know from you folks now who shop at Kroger if this is true or not. If you hear Elton John singing at a Kroger, I would like to know. That way I'll know if it's true or not. And as we end the evening, it is getting rather late. I want to thank everyone for joining us and come back again tomorrow. I'd love to have you. There are links to all of the music you heard on the show on the Strictly Confidential radio site, as well as links to all of the guests. And I'll say, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...